Stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive! Been great today, isn't it?
So, welcome everyone. I'm here. Sorry we're a bit late today, but both D... What are the odds? Both D and me had telephone calls.
Oh!
And we were just commenting before we came on air, D, weren't we? How much we both hate fucking telephones.
Indeed.
I hate being called. I hate being stuck on the phone. I mean, I've had friends before who call me up, you know, and I'm like, and I say, so why are you calling me? Oh, I just wanted to have a chat. What? You're just calling me for a chat. There's no like plan being made. There's no like reason for this. You just wanted to, what, you think I'm a woman? I can't stand it, D. I honestly can't stand telephones. Never have been able to stand them.
Imagine calling you for, like, imagine knowing you, like knowing how you are and still calling you for a chat. It's amazing.
Yes, I mean, I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, D.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on this. So in one of my wildly popular Twitter spaces, I ranted for quite a while about how I hate the entire concept of telephones. I mean, think about it. You know, all of human history. You know, you when you were in your space, you had some expectation of privacy. I mean, someone could come, you know, knocking on your door or leaping through your window. Okay, that's fine. But and suddenly there's the telephone, and so. You know, theoretically, anyone in the world who has the right sequence of numbers can invade your home. I mean, they can bypass your door and they can cause a small object within your home to ring in a horrible way. I mean, I think young people don't understand how loud old electromechanical telephones were, the rotary kind with a rotary dial and the bell. I mean, they were monstrous, you know. But, you know, just this idea that someone could intrude your home. It doesn't matter. I don't know what you're doing. You may be eating. You may be having a moment with your family. You know, you may be sleeping. I don't care. I'm going to barge into your home, and I'm going to force you to pick up this small box and talk to me. I mean, it's absurd. Fuck the telephone.
Oh, I hate it. You know, he's out. He's not in.
Yeah.
Basically,
Think about that. I mean, I had mobile phones until about 5 years ago when I dropped my iPhone into the toilet, and I have not had one since then. You know, I mean, I have one I use for Wi-Fi and things like that, but I don't do calls, you know, because when I'm out or when I'm working, I'm out, you know. I mean, that used to be life, you know, until about, you know, 2005,
back in the Nokia days, D. As you know, there was a Mrs. AA1, and you know, she'd ring me on occasion, you know, just talk, and I was like, you know, after 10 minutes, after 20 minutes, after half an hour, I can just tell you that my first 6 mobile phones ended up getting launched against a wall and smashed into 1,000 pieces.
Well, you know, there was a time when mobile phones weren't like £1,000. You know?
I know. So you can't really do that with an iPhone. I can't just launch my...
You got to think twice. Like, oh, shit, no, I'll launch it on the eBay before I throw it against the wall. Oh, dear, oh, dear. And, you know, of course, yeah, as you say, like women have this very weird relationship with telephone, you know. I mean... Yeah. Even now, you know, because like a lot of younger people, they don't really talk, you know, they text, they. But the idea, you know, yeah, women in phones. And of course, you know, I mean, we all, since it's the deepest lore, we always have to bring up Andy Warhol, and he used to spend like 6 hours a day on the phone. But I mean, of course, his phone etiquette was great, because he would just, like, if he needed to go and get lunch or something, he would just put the receiver down and just go and not tell the other person that he wasn't there anymore.
Well, who's on the other end of the line for 6 hours?
Well, it was one of his, you know, his confidant, usually Bridget Berlin, who didn't need anyone to listen to her. You know, she could just talk. It didn't matter if you were there or not, you know.
Pharaoh has arrived. How are you doing,
Pharaoh?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much. Yes, excellent. Thank you.
What are your views on phones?
I was just listening in. I mean, I've got to say that that feeling of Warhol leaving the receiver and wandering off and do something else. I mean, AA, I do feel that you occasionally do that in streams. you can hear like a rumbling as you go off to get another delicious Pepsi Cola. Gold. Yeah, exactly.
Or Pepsi, yes, occasionally. The thing is, without wanting to get into popular psychology too much, women need to talk to process the world, right? And if they don't have this time where they process things, right, they go a bit nuts. Whereas men need to stare into the fire, see? Therefore, the more they're talked at, the more wound up they get. So there's a kind of inverse. I'm just thinking of that speech from Devil's Advocate, where Al Pacino is having a go at, you know, God being a sadist. He's a sadist! That's how I feel every single time I'm stuck in a half an hour, 45 minute, 1 hour conversation, you know, with a woman on the phone. So anyway, I mean, why wouldn't he make men and women more compatible?
Well, maybe he didn't want them to be together.
I mean, seriously, why? Anyway, yes.
I'm exhausted already. We just started.
Just on that, isn't there a line from Genesis where after the eating of the apple, you know, God says, I'll place enmity between man and woman.
Mm.
And what he meant by that was, you're going to have a really long phone conversation with her once a week.
She's going to call you while she's wandering around Waitrose, you know. And someone in the chat reminds, there's a line from As You Like It. Do you not know I am a woman? When I think, I must speak.
Well, anyway, I'm peaking, Kevin. It's my time now. Remember that? So I've got a thing. One day I'm going to do a deepest lore on a late Al Pacino, on, because I've got a whole thing about, it's the, you know, the film buffs are meant to say Al Pacino was great in the 70s when he was quiet and brooding, but then at some point he just kind of lost it and became shouty Al, whereas I have got this next level take where shouty Al is Pacino kind of I don't know, like in some strange way, transcending acting and becoming like who he was always really meant to be.
Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha!
Hoo-ha! So like his, I mean, he is mental in Heat. He is mental in Devil's Advocate. He is just insane in a whole suite of movies from Frankie and Johnny onward. Even Godfather 3 is a mental performance that has nothing to do with the Michael Corleone of the first two films. So yes, that's one of my little.
Hold on a second. Is this AA with another, you know, controversial opinion? I swear, what you do is you just find out the most kind of basic opinions on stuff, and then like, what's my angle? How can I have my edgelord angle on each one of these topics? Consult the board.
Yeah, although these are also genuine opinions of mine.
Three wheel cars are superior to four wheel cars.
No. That is the kind of Family Guy manatee school of edgy takes, whereas mine are developed over many, many years of realizing what the level one take is, and then just saying like, actually, the thing that every Guardian journalist says isn't right. The thing that I'm saying is right.
There's something interesting to that, just quickly, because again, that's like through meditation and reflection on a subject, you can reach that higher opinion of it, can't you? And I think that's what's interesting about artistic forms, is you can have that the layers of the onion that you can unpeel.
But also, you once you get to know my takes long enough, Pharaoh, you'll realize they're all the same, which is essentially saying that there's a late career renaissance in all great artists, including Bowie, which we talked about. But, you know, Bob Dylan on Love and Theft is the artist he always wanted to be. Shoutyal is like, I mean, do you remember Pokemon where they evolved to their ultimate state? You know, I feel like artists do that, and they evolve to their ultimate state. You know, in this school of thought, fat Marlon Brando in like Superman is the ultimate. That's the artist he always wanted to be.
No.
You have to be more extreme. Fat Marlon Brando in the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or like, late burger chomping Elvis or something like that.
Just on that, I do think there is almost like some kind of different artistic archetypes. You know, you've got the kind of burns brightly and then dies young. You know, are we all just... Are there only four or five artistic archetypes that everyone falls into? I think it's an interesting question.
I wish there wasn't copyright, because I'd love to do a commentary on Heat, you know. She's got a great ass, and there's your head all the way up it. I mean, it's just a mental performance. I don't know if he was meant to be playing somebody on cocaine or something, but anyway, let us get on to what we're going to be talking about. Just before we do that, Pharaoh, anything you'd like to plug, sir?
I did a stream all about the Disney film Frozen yesterday with Poe the Person. Check that out. And it's subversive natures, the worship of witchcraft and other fiendish things.
Now, let me guess. Sensible Poe probably pushed back against that and tried to defend it. But in about 6 months' time, she'll come around to your view.
She was pretty good about it. Like the worst thing was, it just absolutely crapped on the Hans Christian Andersen's original. You know, it was like,
right.
They said it's meant to be based on the Snow Queen, but just as totally isn't. I mean, there was a little bit of witch defense from Poe.
She defended witches. What?
Well, like witches in the past. I think she was saying, you know, it's like, oh, you know, like witch hunts of the past, like, weren't justified, kind of thing.
They were.
I mean, it was a very Reddit tier opinion, I hate to say, Poe. But
Poe, where were you when I presented data? I can't remember the video it was. I presented data on all the witch trials in English history, and the fact that all of these women who were tried for being witches killed their husbands, committed heinous crimes. You know, it wasn't that they were just witches; they did actually do certifiably bad stuff.
Exactly.
So how do you like that, Poe?
I mean, the American witch trials were, I think, slightly less justified.
Americans, I mean, mental, do you? Who cares about them?
I mean, a lot of the American ones were executed because of some evil children just decided to accuse everyone of being witches.
Sounds like Arthur Miller revisionism to me. But anyway, I'm joking. Anyway, carry on, Pharaoh.
Well, that's it, really. It's a really fun stream, and if you're a parent and you like Disney and want to know more, you're curious, check it out on Poe's channel.
Yeah, I will say this, something about Frozen that captures, like, obviously AAA is 3. I haven't really shown her Frozen that much, but we were in a toy store and she saw is her name Elsa? Is that the main character?
It's the blonde one is, yeah.
Yeah, she saw an Elsa flask and she was like, she went nuts for it. She was like, I must have it. She played hell for it. So she has a Frozen Elsa flask.
Dark.
Which she absolutely loves, but there's something about Frozen that really captures the mind of. And then, you know, she's had all these parties recently.
Yes, yeah.
A friend bought her an Elsa doll. So
it, you know, begins. Have you got the princess dresses yet? That's the next logical step.
Oh, she's got an Elsa dress. Yeah, she's got a Frozen dress. Yeah.
See, I stand against this. I hate this idea of telling little girls they're princesses. They should all be taught that they're peasants. Peasants! You're a charwoman at heart!
I mean, I have to say that AAA doesn't really care about dolls and toys that much. She's much more into playing with her little music box and trying on different, like, head... What's that thing that they put over their heads? Hairbands?
A mask? Hairband.
She tries on different hairbands
And
different, like, clips, and then she tries on different clothes and things. And I just thought, I bet you little boys don't play like this. I bet you little boys
They're very different in play. Although I would say that your daughter likes the Nutcracker, and so he's probably way more advanced than most other normal children. You know, she'll be taking you to the opera next year anyway. So,
D, anything you'd like to promote, sir?
I would like to promote the idea that Disney is a completely subversive organization, and I have decided that it's like 1975 is the line. Like, you know, don't show your children any much Disney that was made after about 1975, because that, I think it starts to, you know, that weird thing starts to creep in. I'm convinced there were these videos that I remember from a few years ago of people sort of demonstrating that there was sort of various psychological principles. It just like hypnotized children, you know. And I'm convinced that Disney uses those in their product, you know. I don't have anything to promote. I mean, other than what are we doing? The UO party?
Oh, the Christmas party tomorrow, yes.
Ugh. Yeah, all right.
What's gotten into you, Mr. Scrooge?
I am very bereft of Christmas cheer.
Spirit,
this year.
I see.
You know, I've even got a little tinsel tree right here on my desk, and it's not making me happy. Why don't you two shall cheer me up through this dream. How about that?
Well, I'm just before we get going, I'm kind of interested. I'm looking at the Disney canon now, the animated canon. Or, you know, that is the official classics of Disney, right? Which starts with Snow White. Pinocchio is second, Fantasia is third. You know, there's a very definitive Disney list. I'm just interested by your date. The last film, you know, before and after your cutoff point D of 75, you said, Robin Hood. The Disney Robin Hood would be the last.
I like that one. I'm very popular, very keen.
Although, you know, I'm a bit worried about that one because I think that
furries.
I think there's something in Robin Hood that created furries.
So I do think that the run, you know, in those sorts of circles, there's a golden age, there's a silver age, and then there's like a renaissance later on, which starts with the Little Mermaid.
I do think
the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin is incredibly subversive films.
And I've never seen any of them. I've never seen those films. So the last Disney film I saw was The Black Cauldron, which was sort of the last
85 fully,
yeah, it's 80, yeah. 80 something, yeah, and it was, I believe, the last totally hand animated film that they ever did, you know, using the traditional processes without digital interventions.
Yeah, I'm just looking now. Frozen is actually part of the official Disney canon, Pharaoh. Do you know that? Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen.
Yeah. I'm looking through this list now, and I think D is correct. Basically, I don't know. Pocahontas is quite good, but more like I just like the. I don't know.
It does promote miscegenation in pretty heavy way.
But the story, but wait, I guess the original story isn't it? She just dies pretty quickly, doesn't she? Anyway, and Lion King's okay. That's crap Hamlet.
No. Elton John. Children don't need to be exposed to Elton John.
Yeah.
What was the last Disney film made during Uncle Walt's life?
Jungle Book.
Jungle Book. Okay.
I think he died during the making of Jungle Book. I think. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's enough of that. Oh, and I will remind people, please do buy courses at the Academic Agency. I especially recommend you pick up the Mega Bundle. Get the Mega Bundle because it's got all my courses in it in one decent package.
Merit.
Also available is Farrow's course, The Foundations of Entrepreneurship, and many others. But that's not the merit code,
is it?
No, the merit code won't work anymore. That was an awesome sale.
Right. Oh, it's mega.
What was okay. Meg? No. You don't
for use the Mega it. Bundle. That's gone now as well.
The Mega Bundle doesn't require a code. You just buy it. You buy it, and you get automatic. Okay.
You're buying a lot together.
You get money off. This is a principle known in all retail, all wholesale. Right, you buy a bulk and you get money off. You're familiar with this, Pharaoh, right? This is like
the Costco. You know,
yeah, like buy five DVDs instead of them individually, and they'll be cheaper.
It's a great deal. You know, people are going to be getting lots of money from their grandparents in a week's time. Why not?
Yes.
Why not spend all of it on a Mega Bundle?
All of it on Mega Bundle. Spend your entire Christmas doing my courses, and you'll come out the other end and you'll ace all your exams. I do actually know people who've been through Foundations of Economics who then top their class in economics. It's remarkable. It's because I teach actual micro in that and how to think about doing what they call microeconomics. Whereas if you do economics at in our education system, apparently, I've been told they teach you like supply and demand in week one, and then they're already jumping to like Keynesian macroeconomics in week two.
One course that everyone needs to take is Foundations of Writing, because it's getting really abysmal out there.
Yes, indeed. Foundations of Writing. Yes, indeed. In fact, that's probably my personal favorite one, because I poured my heart and soul into that course. I've got so many. It's one of my little kind of pet passions, as I'm sure we all have. I have so many old grammar books and writing style books and so on. And that's one of those things that has really dropped off the edge of a cliff, in our lifetimes, I would say. There are some good style. I mean, if you have a guy called Simon Heffer, Pharaoh, he's kind of low-key based. He's still around. He wrote a book on the Victorians recently, and people like Jacob Rees-Mogg comment on the back of his books and things. But he has a really good writing guide from the 90s that I find. All right. Why are we gathered here today? We're going to watch some old footage, as we want to do. I've got one from the 1890s. Which just kind of goes around some cities. And then we've got a combination of old adverts and old public films from some were left over, Dee, weren't there?
There's a few leftovers. Yeah. I think we've initiated this tradition. I remember a few years ago, like at about like 4:30 in the morning, doing a pre-recorded stream with Panama Hat and yourself.
Yeah.
Where we watched some old British old footage of London, I think it's good cozy holiday viewing. Although Indeed. Once you see some of these films, you won't feel so cozy after all.
So let us have a little. Let us have a little look then. So this first one doesn't have any sound, and some Indian bloke has put really annoying music over the top of this, so turn it down.
Yeah.
And we'll...
So,
there's Jerusalem. This is all from 1890 now.
I can still hear the music. Get rid of it. There we go.
Now, hold on a minute. This is Jerusalem in 1890. What do you notice about these people? It's kind of interesting to...
There's a lot of fezzes.
Where would you say these guys are from? Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Oh, there's
that's the, yeah, that was a rabbi across there.
So yeah. This is now in Bohemia, in the Czech Republic. It's just kind of a little trip around the world.
Just on these guys, what's interesting about Central Europe and Eastern Europe at this time is that there's this big revivalism of ethnography and ethnographic culture. Mm-hmm. So if you go to any of these countries nowadays, they'll have like an ethnographic museum where they've captured time these outfits and traditions. So can you see this? They've already dressed up for an event. You can see the kind of like woman in the kind of corset and outfit. And it's, I think it's really interesting that the Central and Eastern Europeans realized what the Industrial Revolution was doing to their local cultures. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about, like, why don't we have similar kinds of like regional ethnographic differences? You know, that mm-hmm. there isn't really like an English dress in the same kind of way that they have.
There was Welsh dress revivalism around. I mean, even when I was a kid, we had Welsh kind of traditional Welsh dress up days. I don't know if they still do that.
Is there a picture of you somewhere in the traditional
yeah,
Welsh
there is,
dress
there,
up there?
Yeah, of course.
You need to dig that out.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going home next. I'm going back to Wales, so I'll see if I can pull out the old albums and I'll send a few photos through. You know, as if there aren't enough memes of me. Keep semi-agog happy, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's carry on. So this is Czech Republic. It's all quite civilized in the Czech Republic, isn't it?
Well, again, I think we need to just dispel this idea that the working class didn't dress up well. You know, that they would have obviously work clothes, but they'd also have their kind of Sunday best. And again, it's about creating that homogenous civilization through dress. You know, that's there. You have a little bits of individualism, but everyone sort of looks the same, or there's archetypical clothes. You know,
here are the overexcitable Italians.
Marcus's.
And there's a big ship coming in.
Is it? If it's 1890s, is it oil, I guess, or
festooned with garlands.
They're all off to New York, obviously.
No, that can't be. Oh, yeah, it's
Moscow definitely. Now.
Yeah,
this is pre-revolutionary Russia.
Yeah, 1890s. Like they call it the Silver Age of Russia.
Do you want to go back? Hold on.
Yeah, it could be worth going back. I mean, I would say that the Silver Age is interesting because you've got like influences from the French. You know, the Russian society is obsessed with kind of French culture and French things, but it then kind of got fused, like from Catherine the Great onwards, to this kind of like sort of European. But the lower classes were very, you know, Russian still. So you can see these are all just kind of like workers across there in the traditional boots, etc. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird mismatch, you know. It has the kind of veneer of Europeanism, but I think the call of the East very much runs through the culture still.
Is this you, Spengler talks about Russia's pull towards the Asiatic?
Yes,
it's real question. You know, does it come towards us or does it go towards them? And he thinks ultimately that they're pulled back into the Asiatic. And that seems to have continued up right up to this point today. They've clearly chosen the Asiatic now, haven't they?
Yeah, it's. I think it's really interesting because they sort of break our minds because they look like us, but they act so totally differently.
They're not European.
I've been to St. Petersburg before, and it's very disconcerting because it's kind of like, you know, just being, you know, into like a nice part of England or whatever, but everyone's demeanor, like even the way they walk, is different. You know, it's just so intrinsic in their nature, but they sort of look so you have that kind of cognitive dissonance. You know,
it's a bit like Finland is also like that, because you get, you know, they look white, but they're clearly like Mongols. They're not Europeans. You know, it's very, very odd.
One thing I will just note, by the way, looks quite clean to me. We're always told that streets were filthy and things in the 19th century, but they look pretty clean, these streets, to me. unless I'm
well, yeah, they would be, I mean, fairly clean, but you can sort of see, I mean, that they would be covered in horse shit, you know. I mean, I'm afraid that's just the reality when you have
where is the horse shit?
Well, I'm looking for it. Probably in the middle of the street there. I don't know. I mean, there doesn't seem to be that many horses. If you look at pictures of, you know, like pictures of New York and such, I mean, you know, it's just unavoidable. And they would clean it up, but you know, you couldn't clean it up every second. So,
yeah, maybe.
But yeah, I mean, there would be far less like litter on the streets because people didn't walk around with disposable items all the time. You know, I mean, now everyone has like, you know, plastic bottles and, you know, serviettes and, you know, and whatever, and it drops all over the place. I mean, there was no chewing gum, there was none of this crap. You know, you didn't have refuse constantly waft from your fingers to the ground. So I would say that probably the pavements would have been a lot cleaner of that sort of rubbish. Yeah.
There's something about creating like a front as well. So if you go to a high street today, because you know there are tons of brands all trying to exert themselves on you as you go along. Mm-hmm. You have this kind of mismatched, garish. You know, you've got like a bright red Santander logo here, and then a yellow McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And it misses that unity. And I think what's interesting about these kind of high streets was, number one, even if it was an international brand, they would still try and fit the space they're in, you know. And secondly, just the whole presentation feels like it's connected together, where I feel like a lot of the modern high streets that we are in, there's just these, again, it's just like hyper-individualism, isn't it? It's kind of like little pods, little alien pods sitting next to each other that you can go and enter into.
Just one last thing before we move on from Moscow. Are these chaps wearing uniforms? Are they officers of the Tsar or something? Who are these guys? They look like they're wearing uniforms to me.
But, yeah, I think some of them may be. I imagine. I don't know. I don't know much about Russia, so I don't know what they would be.
Because I think the boot, you know the kind of the quote unquote Cossack look, which is basically it's boots, loose fitting trousers, a shirt which goes over the top. You know how like Tolstoy would wear, for example, but they would have a cap as part of that. So the boots and cap and trousers, that is actually the kind of standard farmer wear at this point. So I'm not sure, like even
pretty smart, kind of, isn't it? It's smart, yeah, even, I think.
Even their surfs looked quite dapper, I think. And again, obviously that look gets kind of taken up as the with the communists, where they're kind of promoting the folkish look or whatever, you know.
I see. Yeah, I do think. I mean, I've been working on a chapter by a guy called Sorokin, who is a kind of Spenglerian sociologist, I guess. And his Russian temperament just comes through his work. Like they are, to your point, there is something distinctly Russian about even like an academic like that. It just comes through in everything that they do. Hard to put your finger on, but you know it if you're familiar with it. You'll kind of know it when you see it. Anyway, let's carry on.
I would also say something is happening, because look at all that bunting and all these, you know, like this looks like maybe there was some sort of parade or something.
Yes, prior. I think you're right there, Dee. There's something going on.
Yeah,
it's a special occasion. Yeah,
because and also, I mean, keep in mind, in these days, you didn't just pull out the camera for fun. I mean, these cameras were massive, and they were most of them were hand cranked, and of course the processing of the film and such was incredibly, you know, expensive. So it many of these may have been a special occasion. These films,
yeah.
It's not a bloody pride event. Look at how black everyone is.
I like the street width as well. You know, and again, no road markings, but you could fit like 10 carriages down there. But it doesn't seem too busy. I just wonder that this kind of black rules gave a certain freedom at the same time. And again, maybe there were more accidents or crashes. But I think. You know, we think about the past as this kind of straitjacket society where, you know, everyone has certain rules. But in many ways, I think we have way more rules than they do. It's just in weird things. You know, I'm constantly annoyed by how motorists are squeezed into smaller and smaller spaces on the road. You know, I've got you know, new cycle lanes around where I am, and there's no cyclists ever. You'll see like one a week or something like that, and so, you know, we're just being you know, restricted in ways that have never been seen before in the past, even under communism, you know.
Yeah. Well, because these people, I mean, you know, in these days it would have been internalized. You know, people would have they would have followed the kind of you know, the kind of strictures and
code
and
of conduct or something,
of the day, because they wanted to, you know, because they, you know, they had a sense of internal order. Now, of course, everything has to be imposed. You know, now everything is done as if it's a, you know, as if it's a school for children, where everything has to be, you know, sort of enforced by, you know, punishment, rather than, again, this internal sense of, you know, of behaving yourself in an orderly fashion in public.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to be too Jeremy Clarkson and Daily Mail like in hating cyclists, right? But I do genuinely hate cyclists. Not the idea of riding a bike, but just the sort of people who it just attracts a certain personality. I may have told this story before, but I'll never forget it. I was pulling up to a roundabout, and you know when you're pulling up to a roundabout, the car in front of me was just about to go, right? And there was a cyclist next to him also waiting. This was quite a main kind of busy round, like a kind of main how can I put it? Like, this isn't like a residential roundabout. This is kind of a proper traffic roundabout, right? Anyway, this car had gone a little bit too close to this guy. So, you know, there he was in his luminous, you know, yellow and pink helmet and his Lycra and all the rest of it. So this guy on his bike did like a comedy pratfall. Like, he kind of, I just watched him capsize and fall on his side, and then like do a roll. He did it on purpose. He wasn't knocked by the thing. He was trying to prove a point to the car next to him. Don't come too close, because this is what will happen. And I just was like, what is this sort of behavior? What I'm saying is that the cyclist tends to be also the sort of person who might be like your school librarian or a referee or something. There's something about the cyclist.
A scold.
Yeah, he's officious. He's a Jobsworth. He's Keith from Nuts in May, you know. Anyway, carry on, Ferro. Sorry.
All I was going to say is that, you know, regarding Dee's point about having like a code of conduct, but but without these kind of penalties, in my mind, that's what true freedom is. Not some kind of lame libertarian, you can do whatever you like in some kind of anarchistic state. It's to have these bigger rules of society, but to also let you just get on. And, you know, that random guy holding a bag of, you know, bag of shopping has more freedom in his life than we'll ever in our lifetimes, I think. And he's probably a serf.
Yeah, this is Tokyo. This is Japan.
Can we just stop a second? I mean, Japan blows my mind because they don't have any like natural iron reserves, so like everything's made out of wood. Like even nails and stuff, it's hard to come by. There is this basically feudal medieval society, and manages to like BTFO Russia a few times. I mean, I think Japan is a I think Japan is a real it's a real wonder in my mind that A, they managed to do that, but B, how could they transform their civilization so quickly? And they've done that twice. You know, they've done it pre World War One, and they've done it post World War Two as well. So
do you know what slightly disappoints me about this scene, though, Pharaoh? If I'm honest. I'm slightly disappointed that there aren't lone warriors going around doing random martial arts.
Too much, you know? Kurosawa, you know. You're Ronin wandering around.
Well, they outlawed it. Yeah. You know, by this time, you couldn't actually do that. I would recommend people, if people are interested in this period, there is a Stephen Sondheim musical, one of the less sort of one of the less popular ones, called Pacific Overtures, which is very interesting. But it's about the Meiji period Japan and the sort of the transition from Japanese feudal society to how very quickly they adapted themselves to Western contact. And it's very good. Very good.
I've got a little pamphlet here somewhere by Everluck. It's called Zen, the Religion of the Samurai. It really is quite remarkable what happened in that country. It's just so... Because
I was going to say is, like, why doesn't this happen with any other Asian country? It's really weird. You know, China is so different in their approach. You know, it's they are like a juggernaut. They are kind of like slow, stiltified, slow moving, while the Japanese are this kind of like in constant flux, changing. I find it very strange just how different the races are between such a short period of space. You know.
And I would say that because of this special nature of the Japanese character, I think the effort by the sinister elements in the West to break Japan and move them into the category that most of the rest of the world is shifting into, that's going to accelerate. You know, they're already starting to try with the immigration and migration into Japan. So.
All I'm going to say is the original anime was based on Western cartoons, wasn't it? So there you go.
Yes, and we lost Shinzo Abe this year. Just remembered. To your point, Dee. Don't know who it was who assassinated him, but you know, the fact is he was closer to being if you were Japanese, he'd be closer to being on our side than not. I would say. Look at that.
Rickshaw. Wonderful. That's
pretty awesome.
What a stogie.
Just on that, I love hearing about like sedan chairs in Georgian England, you know, where you would have like aristos being carried around by four guys on each corner or whatever. Just imagine, but you'd also sort of meet up with your friends, you know, so you would both kind of go down a street together and you could stop and have like a secret meeting and then go on. I imagine that Dee's relatives or like Dee in the past would have like four muscular men oiled up walking around and carrying him around on his sedan chair.
What do you mean the past? What are you talking about? Look at this. Oh, it's wonderful. The roller case, the first roller case.
Look at this, the Faustian Britain. Look at it with its mechanical contraptions, its mastery of nature.
Oh, I love it. I love a good roller coaster. Look, no health and safety. You fall off and get your head severed.
Here's London. That's doing a bit of a jig.
Too bad.
Ooh. Look at that. Ooh. Look at that top hat there. Magnificent.
He just wants to get in the picture. That's hilarious. But again, I just love it. Just look at all those. You think they're Irish, is it?
You think this is Irish, Dee? This
jig? No. They're doing a little gig. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm highly reminded of the scene in Bedknobs and Broomsticks where they sing Portobello Road.
Yes.
And there are random dancers down there doing this sort of dance. So, you know. That film was made in the 60s, not in 1890.
Yeah.
Look at the gleam of that silk top hat in the sun.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a beautiful... Like, again, look how clean the street is as well. It's probably cleaner than today. I think what's happened to the Cockneys is, without a doubt, one of the biggest crimes that England has committed to itself. You know, just the removal of a people that have lived in their location. You know, imagine just turfing the Welsh out. Just like, let's just turf the Welsh out of their homeland.
Why do you think this chap is wearing a top hat versus all the other flat caps? Is there a class differential?
Yeah, I mean, he's a gentleman. I mean, those top hats are beaver fur, aren't they? So, you know, exceedingly expensive. You can see he's got his umbrella as well.
He's got his roller umbrella. Yeah.
You can't see his collar, but I'm like. you imagine he's a swell walking around London.
Do you know what I love about this guy here? He's literally doing the Chaz and Dave. Right, Governor? <He's> literally.
But I mean, everyone, but they're all dressed well. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the thing that strikes you about these old films is that, you know, I mean, even the kind of, you know, the working class, remember that film like, of all the workers coming out the mill, you know, and they were all, I mean, again, they weren't wearing fucking shell suits and, you know,
there's no chunks, Farrow.
Oh my goodness.
There's no pajamas, you know.
It is like loungewear, in my opinion, is like one of the greatest crimes that
society's created. And now what have we got? We've got a Punjabi prime minister who wears a hoodie to show that he's down with the kids, prime minister.
The hoodie.
Hug the hoodie. Dear.
I think part of any national revival, you'd have to create an entirely new look, if that makes sense. You know, the working class needs a new symbolic outfit.
What's going on here?
Uh-oh, subversive. Subversive alert.
Is it?
This is a suffragette gang here.
Oh!
Are they wearing trousers, though? That's the question. Let's have a look.
What are they going to do with blue stockings?
A woman on a bicycle. How revolting.
Is that one of the Royal Parks? That looks quite familiar to me.
Mm.
Where are they here? It could be.
It doesn't look like they're wearing trousers, though. All on skirts.
Maybe it was just a...
This is great. Oh, look. Actually, yes. I mean, I'm just loving the aesthetic of this. This is basically like your English ladies, gentlemen, girl bike gang.
By the way, bicycles during this period were very expensive. You know, a bicycle was a toy of the rich, certainly in the 1890s. Look, here's Columbus people.
Yeah, we've gone up to Scotland now, where all these people were doing all the time is plotting and scheming and subverting. That's all the Scots have done for their entire history. I mean, we talk about the organized minority, right? The Scots so massively over-indexed in influence across the British Empire, across even like prime ministers. They may be the most over-indexy people ever. Inventors. Am I wrong?
No,
I feel like
it's a really interesting question. Why the Scots? You know, is it that my Protestant Presbyterian work spirit? Is it the fact that the weather's so bad you're stuck inside all the time? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe extreme low time preference due to the cold, something like that.
Or is it their deep genius in their bio spirit?
Yeah, maybe.
It could be.
I mean, who are like the Scots? Are they like the Picts ultimately or something? Like, who are they?
They were different. I mean, yeah. I mean, some of them were the Picts. Some of them were the Picts. Some of them were others. You know, that it's a conglomeration. I mean, it was a very tribal society. You know, and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get scrappy to weigh in on this, but
yeah, clan based originally, of course.
I think Nathan Hood is right. That also a lot of them came from Ireland as well.
Sorry, can we just go back here a second?
What's going on here?
I want to see Flagman.
Yeah, what's that?
Whoa!
Is that
wow?
This is some good flag action. Yeah, have a look at them again.
That's aggressive flag action.
A young Columba.
Yeah, exactly. Every year, a young Scotsman is selected to furiously wave around the salt air.
I'd love to know the what is going on here. This is obviously some special occasion, but. What is it?
And this is the golden age of the hat. I mean, everyone has a hat. Everyone.
Those dresses.
I mean, it's just lovely. Can we just go back a little bit as well? Because you get an even better view of on the flag shot. I mean, just look at that there. Just the sea, and also look. It's also interesting how they managed to crowd control without police or Selco security guards.
Yeah, there's no fences. There's no little dumpy lesbian telling you where to go, we could get today.
and an absolute absence of, well, okay, never mind. I mean, there's no diversity in that crowd.
Yeah, of course. But this is what civilization is, you know, being able to come together as a group without any problems and watch a man furiously wave a flag around to a tuba by the looks of it.
Yeah. I mean, well, I wonder what music they were playing. Yeah, like what is the tune that goes along with you know, this martial flag waving?
I'd love to know what this occasion was. Like, why is this dude furiously flag waving?
I will do a little research later on, and I may be able to find out what the context of this is. Okay. Because if this is, you know, if these are indeed from the 1890s, they will be, there won't be many of them, so they will be probably well documented.
This is a big old parade.
I just love how much brass was in that band as well. There is just like, it's all bass, that band.
What are these flag? Are these? Is this some sort of Protestant thing?
Ooh.
I just wonder. I wonder if those are orange flags. I don't know. No idea.
Yeah. Well,
I think there is obviously support, because obviously the Orangemen like are Scottish, aren't they? But genetically, so.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a solidarity thing, but I don't know. Just like a normal, normal activity.
Nathan Hood and someone else says that there's a common riding every year in Selkirk, and it may be that.
What is it? Sorry,
a common riding. So, you know,
There's something on this as well, where again, you can, part of creating unity within a nation requires like ceremony and like events. I think the closest to that we felt is the Queen's funeral. But yes, just imagine you've got something like that 10 times a year. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why people aren't feeling just how much England has changed is because everyone's in our houses nowadays. You know, you go to your work, well, maybe you'll go to work, maybe you'll go to like the supermarket or whatever, and then you'll come back and live in your home. Like, part of the community of the past was everyone's just out and about. They're seeing each other, and I think part of how you know, that we've ended up in this state. You know, if just imagine this with our current demographics, because it would just be obvious the change that's gone on, if that makes sense. We're not confronted with the reality of our situation. Everyone's just like self-segregating, you know. Everyone's just did you see, I saw some data from the census poll where someone was tweeting it out, where there's literally like a river or a street, and then it's just like 90% white on one side of the street and then like 10% on the other, and that's what's happened. Is everyone sort of, there is no such thing as diversity. All that's happened is we've just got different pockets of communities, right, that have risen up and group together. But we need these ceremonies back to create the cohesion, I think.
Yeah, I will say, in Wales, the Eisteddfod is still celebrated, and I mean, generally the Welsh nationalists, like all the other local kind of regional nationalisms, has become extremely global homo and subverted today. But they did do quite a good job of keeping certain things going in Wales, I would say. Well, at least up until a few years ago, I don't know what's happened. I mean, you'd have to speak to someone who's recently been to school in Wales to know if those still go on. But speaking to Hat D, I get the impression they were continued at least another decade after I'd left. So, yes.
Yeah.
This is now Australia.
Prisoners coming off the train.
A young Chris Gard coming out.
Chris Gard's criminal ancestors. Yeah.
There's some Italian coming out there, which is Marcus's old ancestor.
Just on the colonies a second. I think the colonies are fundamentally important to capture and use the energy of certain young men. because you know Bap talks about whatever mm-hmm. that he wants his privateers or whatever. There are so few avenues for young men with aspirations and dreams of something else. You know, I just feel like we're part of the juggernaut of modernity is it's such a dream crusher. And there are no avenues for exploration or adventure, or if they are, you're sort of sausage. You know, you buy off the shelf a consumer version of what adventure is. Adventure is, you know, a two weeks in Ibiza or something like that. It's like it's curated, and you know, the energy is castrated. While you know, with this kind of colonial setup, you could literally leave. You know, as a bricklayer in London, whatever, and then you know, make something of yourself at the you know in these places. And I think
you go. Well, I was just saying you don't understand. I mean that sort of spirit is dangerous to the managerial state. I mean it's absolutely the opposite of what they want. They don't want people to do that. You know, because it threatens order. It threatens the sort of compartmentalized order that they've spent so many decades setting up, and they're not about to let it happen. You know, now, oh, join the military, learn to be a man by taking, you know, sort of domestic violence and diversity sensitivity training. You know, you too can learn to walk in high heeled shoes. I mean,
already, all army are actually nurses. Really, they're all ambulance drivers nowadays. It's codified.
Mm.
I heard some sort of military advert on the radio the other day, or it was on the TV, and it was like join the army and discover who you really are. You know, that was how they were trying to sell it. But of course, that messaging to me smacks of. Do you remember when we looked at the military adverts, Pharaoh?
Oh, yeah,
and
the
girls on the night out and having a good time and traveling and all that sort of stuff. They're still kind of going on that sort of idea, really.
Be all that you can be. There's
speculation in the chat that what we're seeing here is the Melbourne Cup, which is a famous race, horse race, you know, that was established at some point in the 19th century. So, yeah,
horse racing, obviously, like this is a superior sport to football. It's interesting how like this has lost its prominence in society, I think.
There are the horses,
and if you go to the vestiges of, you know, the racing society, like Panama Hat has talked about, go to the Derby or something, and you know, it's just slags, you know, drunk off their ass by 10 a.m. You know,
can I just say what I love is this is so close to the behavior of the people in the. Do you remember where in Mary Poppins where there's the merry-go-round? You know, Mary Poppins wins on the back of a merry-go-round horse. The chaps in the crowd are exactly like this, including the hat motion and so on. It's just amazing to see it in, you know, in real life, so to speak.
Yeah, notice how useful the hat is. I mean, you know, the hat wasn't just to keep on your head. I mean, the hat was to, you know, it was to gesture. It was to, you know, it had many uses, the hat.
Oh. We should bring it back and look at it. Look at this chap here. Imagine, I reckon he's got a proper punch on him. This guy here, with that moustache and that bowler hat.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, amazing.
Now we're in Geneva.
literal goats there. Love it.
I love the idea of driving goats down a street in Geneva.
look at this guy with a long.
That's a yodeling horn, isn't it? That's the
yodeling horn.
And they're wearing like dirndls. An Alpen horn.
One of the few places in the world that had the Calvinist dictatorship last for any amount of time.
Still didn't last very long.
I mean, I won't have a word said bad of the Swiss after that lint advert. The last bastion.
Yes. Yes.
The based lint advert.
I'm just gonna go around central London with one of those. Yodeling horns, just haranguing people, just making really loud noises.
cows will get. Look at that pipe. Oh,
it's amazing. That guy there.
Look at that guy. Amazing.
But you know where you are though. You just take a look, you look and see what they're dressed, and you can tell where you are. It's I do think that the aesthetics are so important for identity, and just saying who we are.
In terms of look at what they took from you. That man, his very existence is now a memory. He doesn't exist in 2022.
His descendants are now bank tellers of like some kind of international drug lords accounts or something like that. You know,
I will say if you go to Switzerland, they are still in their hearts quite based.
Well, I have a friend who went there, and he said they just love a military parade. They just cannot wait to dress up and march, basically. So.
Yeah, no, there is something about the Swiss character that still remains to some degree, you know.
They have the unique direct democracy canton system as well in Switzerland, which has allowed them, although I from what I last saw, that is rapidly being eroded as well by the regime. But
they
managed to hold out for a lot longer than other places due to the fact that they have the they vote per policy. So it's that's right. Well, we're going to ask you: do you want to increase immigration? No. You know, but you know, that gets eroded by outsiders moving in, of course, who then get a vote.
Or even Netflix, you know, I think the problem with anything like that is your votes are only as good as the people who make the votes. And all you need to do is corrupt the people, just shove new ideas in their head, make them watch Frozen from when they're young children. And all of a sudden, your direct, like that the direct voting system is a tool against yourself, you know.
Yeah, there are also more liberal and more based areas. And I seem to remember that there are more French areas and more kind of Germanic-y areas as well, from what he was telling me. So, I mean, don't quote me on any of that. I'm going on kind of secondhand stuff there. But I think that's the case, that each of the cantons has their own flavor in a way. So let's carry on.
And of course, up until quite recently, most of the money and art in the world was hidden away in Switzerland. Brooklyn! Oh, no.
If we're going to see any subversion, it's going to be here.
Well, I'll tell you, Brooklyn was not... let's just say that element moved in later than...
It came in the 1890s,
Yeah, I mean, this is when they would have been slipping in.
They would have been arriving. And, well, if you want to go down a rabbit hole, look at the census. Look at the history of the census between 1890 and, let's say, 1930. Records being gone missing in fires and all sorts of things. But anyway.
I've got a question for you guys. The bus or the tram as the ultimate city transport mechanism? Are you a fan of the bus or are you a fan of the tram?
Interesting question. I always think the tram is quite aesthetically pleasing, but I always see it as something continental, you know. Yeah. I always think of it as something that you'd see, you know, just over there. So I'd have to go with the bus just on the basis that, you know, the red bus, the London bus, etc.
I would say neither. Everyone should stay in their own fucking neighbourhood.
Lots of people are saying the tram, Farrah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, people should keep in mind, though, that again, the infrastructure required to operate a tram system is quite ugly, you know. I mean, especially, of course, if they're depending on how they're powered, but yeah, I mean, you will have a spider web network of overhead
wires,
cabling.
I do love the aesthetics of an old horse-drawn omnibus, which looks like it's just going to keel over at any moment. Everyone's just packed in like sardines.
I mean, part of me always thinks that any mode of transport that is network bound, like a tram would have to be, does give whoever the municipal authority is kind of lots of sneaky ways to control where people go.
That's a good point.
So that's something I've often thought about. Whereas the automobile is the upgrade from the horse, right? So I mean, obviously buses have set routes, but buses, like the bus company, could decide to run a route which doesn't have to have a tram line connected to it, if that makes any sense. So
The obvious right answer to this, by the way, was the bendy bus, which is the peak of transportation. But anyway, I'm only joking, obviously.
I hope so.
This is Manhattan, huh?
And that there's elevated, by the way, those elevated railways still remain in, certainly in Brooklyn.
Are these early cars here?
Yep, those are early automobiles.
Wow.
Again, very expensive at the time. These would be well-to-do people. Wait, hang on. Where is that? I could tell where this is.
Is that the Empire Hotel? I may have stayed in that. If so, it just kind of reminds me of the same sort of windows and.
Yeah, probably not though. That sort of what they called like Romanesque style though, was sort of waning in popularity around this time.
Well, we're in Berlin now. There wasn't much in New York.
No, well, there would be more of that. Berlin.
If you just go back to the end of that Berlin one, that was the one of the omnibuses that was going on. You can just see it there. Yeah, coming on the left hand side. If you just click on a couple of seconds.
Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah. people hanging onto the side of it.
Yeah.
Panopticum.
Yeah. Again, notice there's no like crossing zones, no whatever they call pelican crossings. Just people just walking, just jaywalking as they please.
Yeah. You're on your own.
It's Milan.
That's the cathedral you can see there in the background.
I quite like that the lady's dress here has a recognizably Italian touches, but this is a very Italian Italian.
The North had a lot of influences in from like Austrian dress, didn't they, from like the Habsburgs owning Venice and stuff like that. So
back to New York.
Oh yes, the Central Park ice skating.
Do they still do that?
Yes, I believe that they still do that. I think if it freezes over, they still do it.
We've for some reason the New York clips are very brief.
Very brief.
We're back to France. They're ice skating as well.
Yeah, it doesn't say where it is though.
I don't get the impression this Indian dude did that much research, D. He just kind of found footage and stuck music on it. This is Paris.
Yeah. Oh, this is from the World's Fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
1899, I think. This is famous for having this weird, like, electric waterfall at the center of it, which was very, very, very strange. But they were kind of trying to show off electricity being safe, basically.
Well, here's a thought. We've been watching all this footage and just kind of comparing it to now. But do you think an Oswald Spengler or somebody like that might look at it and say, actually, we're seeing quite a lot of world homogenization going on here, that the styles between these various different countries are not as marked as they would have been even 100 years earlier?
I think you're definitely right. And I wonder whether it is, the international trade being an important part of that. Things like these carriages all look similar, don't they? And again, the influence of England, probably.
This is basically the British world order that we're watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by the way, you can see all the horse shit. The good shot of all that, all those things in the road, that's all horse shit.
That's not too bad.
I mean, it doesn't smell that bad, bullshit. But, And you could see the obelisk, the Paris obelisk in the background. The Egyptian, yeah. Ooh,
well, there's a steam train.
Beep beep.
We're still in Paris, I take it.
Well, it's just film Espanola there, so. I like the double decker steamer there. I'm sure Time Steed there has something to say on this.
The Indian guy didn't give us a space.
Do you remember train carriages when you could get out of them at any time?
Yeah, when they were still moving.
Yeah.
Could you?
It depended on the line. In Suffolk, where I grew up and stuff, you could literally just get out when the train hadn't fully stopped yet.
Do you think we're in Spain then? Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's just a Spanish archive, though, so it's hard to tell.
It does say Maison at the top there.
So. Yeah, there we go. No, this is France. There's a French people, obviously.
What's the full face veil for? Did you know that? Can you just go back a second?
I saw it. I don't know. That's.
Was she a widow? Was that something that
she may have been? Yeah, it was an older woman. I don't know. Marseille. Oh God. Yeah, go to Marseille today and then note the difference.
People
could have been mourning. It could have been mourning dress.
She was a ghost. No, I mean, I would have to guess that this is some widow deal. It could be wrong. See, this is the sort of thing you could do. You could just ask all those questions and find out the answers and publish it. That would be some like interesting research that you could do.
Mm.
Now, what's going on here? We're in Marseille, but is this American influence I'm seeing? What's going
American
on here?
American influence, huh? American. Wonder what that would be. Chocolat Russe.
Selling chocolates there.
Du bébé.
Figure out what they're selling.
A Croix Rouge.
Wonder if it's a cigar or something like that. Just trying to think of what would have come from America back then.
A la Courant. Could be. You see, though, I mean, in certain cities, by this time, things were plastered with advertisements. I mean, London, if you look at pictures of certain parts of London,
this is a fire. They're putting out a fire, look.
Yeah. It's a demonstration, the Paris Fire Brigade.
Paris Fire Brigade, yeah.
I remember seeing there's places where you can do this at the seaside still, but I remember as a child putting boats on the boats on the thing like that.
I like this moment where this young urchin here is hit with an umbrella. But watch. Go on. On your bike.
Speared away. Oh, wonderful.
What's this? Here? Now, when I was a kid, I was told that this was our future in the Jetson.
Yeah, the
and
people
little
mover,
did we know that
yeah.
they were doing it in the 1890s. What?
Yeah. Look how simple. I mean, that's wonderful. Oh. The Tory fell, you know, considered by many at the time to be a hideous blight on the Paris landscape.
Somewhere in Italy, this.
Oh, look at that doggo.
There's St. Mark's there in the background. Very beautiful.
Oh, filthy pigeons. Oh, God, I hate them.
I had a friend who we went to Italy for some reason. I can't remember. And he notoriously got done. There are like kind of gypsy women selling seeds and things, and every single time he would get nailed by some seeds, and then he'd be stuck with these bird seeds in his hand, and then like hundreds and hundreds of these filthy pigeons come and try to, you know, have the seeds from his hand.
Disgusting.
Served him right, really. Served him right.
And those pigeons do terrible damage to the architecture around there. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem.
But was it always a problem, though? Because, again, if you see pictures of St. Mark's in the past, in like medieval times, there are no pigeons. Where does this pigeon problem come from?
Where did they all come from? Yeah.
They were introduced. I mean, so I don't know about Italy, but I know that in America, the pigeon, the sort of pigeon that you find in urban settings isn't it's not native. They were actually brought for food. You know, they were brought as to eat, because of course pigeon is quite good, and basically the entire population of that type of pigeon whose name I can't remember. They were all basically escaped pigeons meant for the table. And they're invasive because they don't have they're very few predators for them in cities, so they take over.
Sorry guys, I literally cannot resist doing this. I have to do this again. Watch this now. Watch.
Away with you, beggar.
Away. Hinge.
All right, so let's get back to Italy.
I love the scene as well. Again, it's so random. A guy with a guitar, then like a drunkard being attacked by a dog there.
He's not being, he's playing with a dog. Oh. Actually, maybe. I don't know what's going on.
He'll probably have rabies.
No, he didn't have rabies. God.
We're in the Hague.
Den Haag. I also like films from this period because people hadn't yet they hadn't been trained how to behave in front of a camera. You know, they didn't quite know what to do.
Oh, is this it's footage of Pope Leo the 13th.
Yeah. There was something going around on Twitter recently of showing these films and claiming that he is the oldest person to appear in a motion picture. Then, I mean, in other words, he was born in 1810, and he was the oldest person to be in a film, in a movie, in a motion picture. Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to shout out to his little hand wave there. I mean, he went to 10 years to Pope school to do that. I mean, just look at the smooth action here.
I don't know. I feel like Elizabeth II may have picked up some tricks from Leo the 13th.
Yeah, I just don't think you get popery like this. You know, this is some high quality popery. Just watch a second. He's lining up. He's relaxing himself, and then a smooth hand motion there.
All right.
There's a sign of the cross. Wonderful.
He, all right. Bloody Anglican.
Urchins in France.
Something about the late 19th century urchin that is difficult to replicate. Look at those short trousers. I think it's amazing.
I think that's it.
That was it.
Lovely.
So we were going to move from that now to a video called, this is from Dee's ephemeral folder. It is called Mid-Century, Halfway to Where. So this was filmed in 1950. So we're jumping ahead 60 years now. There's going to be sound with this one. And it's a good question. We're right in the middle of the 20th century, but where are we headed?
Where are we headed?
If they only knew, eh?
Oh. Well, I think some of them did know. Wait, what? We didn't do the countdown. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Do you want me to do a countdown?
Ready? Yeah, go back. Yeah, all right.
I'll do 3, 2, 1, and then play, right?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, and play.
Time, life, and fortune.
The March of Time.
Seems like that font.
Already a linear progressive.
That is, yeah, that looks like 20th century, the typeface. That one I don't know. It condensed.
As the world passed into the second half of the 20th century after the birth of Christ, Western man was confronted for the first time in history with the problem of whether his world and his works would outlast the century, whether his culture would survive.
Spoilers.
The answer is no.
Spoilers.
It's strange seeing so many Americans praying together. You know, you very rarely see that, like on TV. Carry on.
On the dreams of his ancestors, modern man has molded the earth to his liking. Proud.
And also Pharaoh, when they said after the birth of Christ for the date.
Yeah, exactly. They use CE. CE is one of my most hated things. I hate when people.
I stubbornly use AD and BC.
Same. I don't use it. I hate it.
Of his vast creative ability, he can boast of the grandeur of his achievement and admire the scope of his own imagination.
Don't be too proud of your man, mechanical monstrosity.
But that very knowledge which enables him to build is the knowledge that has taught him to destroy. And in the 20th century, man's capacity for destruction was demonstrated on a terrifying scale.
Are we going to get some Hitler bashing now, Dee? I reckon.
Yet none can deny that man's progress in material things is today at its highest peak. In an industrial age, the worker has achieved, through technological advances, a level of production never dreamed of at the...
This is the first black man we've seen
on the
footage.
This is progress. This is what peak progress looks like. Yeah.
Beginning of the century.
Sorry, pause a second. I just love mechanical lathes, and again, just machining, because it's a real, if you could just go back a little bit, just to any of those guys, it's just an absolute art, what they're doing there. Let's say that guy, what he's doing there. You know, it's
this dude here.
Yeah, this is a real skill. He's making a turbine, or some kind of turbine, hand lathe. It's actually insane. The amount of effort and time it takes, you know, it's a real skilled job. It's like one of the last areas of craft that was left, I think, at this point.
Industrial designers and architects promise modern man a life of smooth efficiency.
Ooh, we're really, they're leaning into that Faustian spirit right here.
Oh, look at that beautiful. I love it.
Material progress, which has given man so many new conveniences.
Sorry, stop again. Did you spot the little tiny bar? Is it Barcelona chair on the top there, D? Top right hand side.
Up here.
Hang on. I'm having to look at my phone. That's like a model Barcelona chair. You can also see, if you look in the windows, you can see little model Eames lounge chair wood.
As well. This is like AA's dream home right now here. Just the
mid-century look. I mean, if only this is what we'd gotten. This was a very tiny proportion of what we actually got, I'm afraid. But
You see, there is something interesting in this period, though, because there's the kind of technocratic progressive vision, but it's still recognizably Anglo in spirit. Hasn't yet been, let's just say...
Yeah, hijacked, yeah.
Hijacked by various other groups and so on. So.
I don't like what they're doing, but I can respect them at the same time. I mean, when they're high rises, etc. Like, at least they had vision. At least they wanted to like do something and to change the world in a big way. You know, Nietzsche going on about, you know, you need to do big things or like big, are those serious changes. Like nowadays we can't create anything good. You know, we spend years and years doing the smallest things, and it's just an embarrassment. At least this stuff, even if it was degenerate in many levels, was like something, you know.
It's actually been interesting because, you know, I've been writing this book. Spengler, who has this, you know, very detailed, long book about the seasonal cycles, and obviously we're in winter, you know, deep winter now. But his view, like when he's saying things like optimism is cowardice, or he's like, there's nothing you can do to fight this. You can't go back and embody some previous spirit. You can't be the people of spring. You can't be the people of summer. We're in winter. So you have to like lean into it. So if you read his book, Man and Technics, that's what he's saying. Like, you actually have to just go for it. Just like the only way to still be part of what he calls world history is to truly like embrace being Faustian in this way. It's kind of a strange conclusion from Spengler. It's not the only way to go with a cyclical history, but it's kind of interesting that that's where he lands on that. So he would have kind of been for this in a strange way.
This is also something I've tried to explain to people about why, artists and writers and such of the earlier 20th century, why many people who would have been associated with the right, I mean, like T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound, why they embrace modernism as their form, you know. This is the same with the you know, visual arts. I mean, why would, you know, this is the thing that I think bedevils me all the time. You know, this idea that if you want to, you know, if you're a person of the right, you have to embrace this aesthetic of the past in a way. You know, you've got to be trad. You know, you can't sort of, you know, you have to be out of your time. You know,
it's a specific kind of like period though as well. I think that's the funny thing about the trad ideology. Yeah. It's specifically like French Rococo romanticism, and also like maybe a bit of Victoriana thrown in as well, for good measure.
Exactly. But yeah. I mean, 19th century, you know, which is of course the age of, I mean, so many of these things at that time were, you know, they were kind of revival movements, you know. I mean, they were, I mean, it's like saying the Pre-Raphaelites, you know, they weren't, there was nothing, I mean, they weren't medieval, you know, they were Pre-Raphaelites. I mean, their work ended up being the embodiment of their time. It wasn't like they were kind of medieval reenactors or something like that, you know. But I think a lot of people confuse this. They confuse the sort of, you know, these kind of 19th century revival movements for like authentic, you know, the authentic spirit of earlier times, and which it isn't.
One of the very interesting things about Spengler is that he would insist that all those people are just being delusional, that even with their best will in the world, they won't be able to achieve it. And I mean, he has a really interesting idea that the Renaissance was a total failure on its own terms, that the Renaissance bid to return to neoclassical, what he calls Apollonian forms, completely failed, and they ended up being Faustian despite themselves. That's what
the Baroque is, isn't it? It's the Faustian spirit seen through like the classical lens, basically. You just can't take the Gothic out of the German, basically.
His basic idea is that if you're living now, let's say you're a man in 2022, and you're trying to embody the spirit of some other time, you're like a kind of dog trying to be a cat. You just won't be able to do it. It's in your, regardless of how you try to meow, you're still going to woof, if that makes any sense.
It's like a man trying to be a woman, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
Never going to work.
Material progress, which has given man so many new...
Stop.
Three-wheel car.
And ironically, there was a callback, Farrow, to one of my edgy takes before. They've invented exactly. the Robin Reliant, but it looks looks a lot better here than it did in real life. Doesn't it?
Many new conveniences has at the same time speeded up the tempo.
Look at that. Isn't that a magnificent looking train?
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Come on!
I like how the train itself is leaning. The design leans forward to give you that sense of motion from it.
If Tony Blair's vision of progress was this, I think everybody would get on board with it. Just be like, yeah, all aboard the steam, all aboard the train, everyone. We're heading to the thing is, future. Like
men like Tony Blair don't have an aesthetic of any kind. 100%. You know?
Or they do. If they do, it's crap. Remember that? Remember his like office where it's like the picture of the Union flag? It was just like such crap art. Or kind of like his vision was like leeching off Britpop and stuff like that. You know, he's at best, he was like a cultural leech, but he didn't have an idea of what was good. I think what we forget about is with all of these aristocrats and nobility, they created the fashions. You know, they commissioned clothes. They told what they said, build this kind of building, etc. So, you know, they were great men in their own regards as leaders, but they were also aesthetic as well. You know, they had an idea of what looks good.
And yeah, that's they what, weren't that's middling we, turds like they are now.
That's what managerialism loses. It has the ability to command and to organize, but it will never be able to do anything like this.
For lack of a better term, there's a Bappian vitalism about this train here. This speaks to Bronze Age mindset or something like that. It's just like, because you know, there's always the split between the futurists and the trans, right? If this was the kind of vision of the future, I reckon young men could get on board with it. But it's just like the vision of the future is, you know, like eat the bug and get in the pod and, you know, it's gay, basically. It's not something that you can get excited about.
Of his life.
Yeah, this was streamlined, by the way, if people are looking for the word for that style.
But with the acceleration of his existence has come a nervous tension, which is the outstanding feature of our age.
The scold.
Ooh.
Can we rewind to the scold there in the back there? I'm just imagining this is AA. He's driving Mrs. AA to the Waitrose. Look at that face there.
Well, you know, I refuse to drive with Miss AA in the car. She drives everywhere.
I forgot you like to be driven around. Yeah, sorry.
I won't drive with her. I just like, after a few years of backseat driving, I was like, no, you can drive.
This man. Look at this man talking out. Yeah, why I order.
Why I order. Yeah. It's Beardy and Alex.
Dissatisfaction and boredom with the daily routines of life are increasingly apparent. And no matter how streamlined the design of modern living...
Was that an OxoCube?
Yeah, they're making a stock here.
Everyday tasks in the 20th
century... Do they have OxoCubes in America?
Yeah. I don't think they were OxO. They were probably something else, who knows.
...regarded with distaste.
See, like, they knew what was up. I mean,
in this age of tension, man is assiduous and eager in his search for relaxation. Oh. Too often, unhappy with himself, he drifts into easy avenues of escape.
I feel like the directors of this movie had all read Spengler or something.
Yeah, that's what I meant. They knew what was up.
Yeah, I just feel like. There's a weird... people forget, by the way, those books were incredibly popular among the intelligentsia. The two volumes of Decline of the West sold 100,000 copies. The Arnold Toynbee's Study of History, 300,000 copies. And the 12-volume complete edition of Toynbee sold 7,000 copies.
7,000
copies of the 12.
That's
volume.
A lot. That's a lot. Yeah.
You know, that's even more than Populist Illusion sold. That's only a small book, you know. So
yeah.
I'm just saying that these ideas were in the ether around this sort of time. So it's It's kind of not surprising in a way.
Ooh.
Creatively reflecting
Museum
the
of modern art,
of the times is modern art.
Yeah.
An impatience with old-fashioned forms and limitations
Wait,
has launched the 20th century artist on a restless search for new ways of expression and for new techniques.
Paul Klee. Yeah.
Today's
Juan Miró.
Wide acceptance of modern art indicates that the public too.
Girl Before a Mirror, Picasso. It's a quiz show.
The future role of art in a mechanized
Have you read any Herbert Read books?
Herbert Read? No, I can't say that I have.
Presumably this is Herbert Read.
Is this Herbert Read?
Presumably, right. Can I just say, as somebody who's been buying lots of expensive books recently, check out his shelves.
Yeah, look at those books.
He has got a good... That is good. I feel like that might be a Shakespeare collection there.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I think I've got that. My somebody bought it for me one year, and it's right next to the Bible. I think it was a kind of very common thing to put Shakespeare and the Bible right next to each other.
Also, notice he's got a Ben Nicholson book. Ben Nicholson was a British abstract artist, early 20th century British abstract artist.
You know, Desert Island Discs, you get complete works of Shakespeare and Bible for free. Do they still do that?
Yeah,
interesting.
Hmm.
We should do Desert Island Discs one time. Maybe I'll just do a whole spate of Deeper Stores where I just do Desert Island Discs.
I like it.
Or we could expand it to Desert Island Objects or something. You know,
it
doesn't have to just be music.
Books.
Desert Island Books. Yeah, Desert
Objects.
Island.
Yeah. Furniture. Crockery.
Such distinguished critics as Britain's Herbert Read.
Oh, I do know Herbert Read. Yeah, I do know Herbert Read. Okay.
He's about to talk. Let's see what he's got to say for himself.
50 years, all the arts have had to accept the triumph of the machine. Traditional forms of painting and sculpture have no function in our streamlined existence.
Oh.
Ooh. Pharaoh, is this killing
he's
you?
Mental. He's fucking mental.
Just like... Put him in the context of AI art and then see if that's what he'd accept, you know? Like, he'll sign up to ArtStation and get all that sweet AI art, you know?
You have to accept the reality of the machine, Pharaoh.
What does that even mean? What does that
even mean?
He's
like a futurist. He's a futurist.
Function over form. Function over style.
If they are to find a place in the civilization of the next half century, the visual arts must effect a compromise with the machine. This can be done only within the terms of what we call abstract art.
Why? Literally, that's such a crap argument.
Because I don't actually understand. It doesn't follow.
Because,
how does this?
Because my machine.
It can only be done.
I've got a kettle. I've got a whisk now. I've got a home whisk. And the home whisk forces me to have abstract art.
Yeah.
It is a bit of a kind of non sequitur. How do you jump from that argument to this?
Look, if you read the Futurist Manifesto, there is interesting stuff there talking about the power of the machine. It's the future. It's this again, it's about vital energy. But what we've seen is that the machine has is a form of golden handcuffs to society, which when it was meant to free us, but it's in fact restricted what we do. The amount of low quality Photoshop art that is now being produced, you know, that kind of generic global art style, all because of Photoshop. You know, Photoshop and its consequences has been massively detrimental to creativity and art. I would say maybe in those first, you know, like 1910 to 1930, there's something true to the vital effect of the machine, but the machine is has broken away from its master, and we are its slave in today's society. We must break the machine.
Just to counterpoint a little bit.
Oh.
I don't know. Did you know whose piece this is? Or
I was trying to figure out who did this one, and I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I could certainly tell the period. I mean, this is clearly like I would say 45 to 50. may be a British piece, but I don't know. There was this type of linear abstraction was kind of in vogue. But
if I was to gesture towards a reading, though, in light of Reed's manifesto, right? What if the artist here is saying, like, ah, I'm trapped by machines, I can't get out, and this painting is saying, ah, modernity, like Michael Jackson's Scream or a Radiohead album or something like that.
But the point of abstract art is that it's totally devoid of that kind of meaning and reading at the same time.
No, that's a simplification.
Okay. Let's find out what this art piece is called, and let's see if it has a reading to it. Unfortunately, I've got to go now. I'll look forward to the rest of watching the rest of the stream later.
But the adverts.
We're gonna have to do a part two, D. We're gonna have to do a part two.
No, we're gonna soldier on without Pharaoh.
All right, we do have to do a part two though, because I'm gonna have to go soon as well.
Oh, for God's sake!
I know.
All right. No, we've got to do some of the funny ones before we go. So anyway, we'll get through this one. Well, sorry you have to go. Bye, Pharaoh.
But abstract painting and sculpture
That's will Henry
hardly
Moore.
Provide the emotional release which millions now seek at popular spectator sports.
Oh, look at them. Look at digging art. No, how are they going to have the release that's needed by the populace?
The tension look at these the miserable trucks. By its music.
Something in my bones is tingling. I smell subversion in this sequence, but we'll see. Look at that peak G.I. Joe, Boomers Were Kids era, Let's Go USA with a drummer. Isn't that cool?
Mental illness and the breakdown of the individual personality have become the medical profession's great new problem.
Talk about subversion.
Multiplied and magnified, the insecurity of modern man has been tragically demonstrated in the catastrophe of total war. And the first half of the 20th century saw a new terror loosed upon the world.
Yes, Adam.
Unleashed upon the world by America. Why is this? Splitting two conflicting concentrations of power.
Okay. And we know what those are, don't we?
Oh, there he is!
There he is!
Sorry.
Solidly opposed to the Western concept of democracy.
Best.
With over 750 million people under communist rule, nearly one-third of the population of the Earth, Soviet Russia holds a commanding position in the future destiny of the world.
Stop it! Stop it!
Since World War II, communism, by force and by propaganda, has extended its frontiers into the heart of Europe.
Bloody commies!
Russia's newest and possibly
the
most
Red
important
Scourge.
Games have been in the Orient, where half a billion Chinese have been herded into the communist camp.
I think they kind of herded themselves into the communist camp.
Across the world, the Western democracies, led by the United States, oppose the communist drive for world power. Marshall Plan aid has been of enormous assistance in rebuilding the free nations of Europe and has started them on the way toward economic union.
Yeah, I could sniff the subversion as well.
In economic cooperation throughout Western Europe, the United States has joined with 11 nations in the Atlantic sphere in a new defensive pact against outside aggression.
Oh no.
Implementing the pact, America's military assistance program for Europe has provided arms for those Atlantic Pact countries which are in need of them.
How helpful.
For the possibility of actual war must always be in the minds of men like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Omar Bradley.
Well, how a future war will be fought depends on when it is started. Begun tomorrow, it'll be much like World War II. But 10 years from now, war could only be more destructive than the last.
But, Dee, if this was the order, would you not support it? If it was those men as opposed to the leaders we've got now?
Target-seeking projectiles?
Are they not easier to support?
They're much easier to support, yes. I mean, I don't know. There's difficulties there, but still, yeah, I see what you mean.
This film was made at peak Faustianism, D. This is like the peak Faustian film of all time.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Indeed.
The more I work on the plans for defense, the more I am convinced that
four-star
war is
general.
Not inevitable, and that our defense plans are only a part of our strategy for a lasting peace.
Of dramatic importance is the newly won independence of 6 Asiatic countries. The second half of the century will
Tiger.
Expose them to world forces from which today they seek to remain aloof.
Just look at that map. So we've got Thailand. I mean, Indonesia's kind of been lost to Islam, hasn't it? I mean, Indonesia's not really in the Western sphere of influence anymore, would you say?
I would probably not really, no.
Philippines. They haven't highlighted Korea, interestingly. They've highlighted Pakistan, which is India. What's this here? This is Eastern Pakistan's become Bangladesh now. Is that right? Burma. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
In India, freedom from British rule, long a dream of the venerated leader Mohandas Gandhi, was realized just before his death.
Yeah, with a lot of help.
The job of guiding India's millions in this critical period fell to his follower, Pandit Nehru, who knows that India, to resist the infiltration of communism, must quickly consolidate her new position. In the worldwide shifts of political influence, the Western powers still stand as the bulwark against communism.
Do not suppose that half a century from now
there he is.
You will not see 70 or 80 millions of Britain spread about the world and united in defense of our traditions, our way of life, and the world causes which you and we espouse.
How's it going, Winston, though? How's it going? God's sake.
1950, yeah.
Let us then move forward together in discharge of our mission and our duty, fearing God and nothing else.
I mean, what happened was they defeated the communist threat, and then lo and behold, they were the subverters all along.
Yeah, we were the bad guys all along.
We were the bad guys all along. I mean, how did that work out?
Champions of the Western concept of democracy are everywhere derided by the Stalinist mouthpieces, men like Britain's communist chief, Harry Pollitt.
Working people of all capitalist countries will become the masters of the wealth they produce.
Boo! Scum! Marxist scum!
As in the Soviet Union, China...
Look, he's openly got a fucking Stalin poster.
A picture of Lenin...
Here he is, living freely in London. Why did you tolerate it, you idiots?
A giant bust of Karl Marx.
I mean, does this not show that they were never serious, though? It's just like, oh, yes, the communist threat. This guy who we have not arrested in any single way, who's allowed to freely propagate communist propaganda from his office in London. Fuck's sake.
Oh.
It was fake, I'm telling you. If they were serious, he'd be locked up. He'd be arrested by the FBI, as Francis Parker Yockey was.
Concept of democracy.
He's British. He's arrested.
But he could be arrested by MI5 then.
All right.
Men like Britain's communist chief, Harry Pollock.
The working people of all capitalist countries will become the masters of the wealth they produce, as in the Soviet Union, China, and people's democracies. Poverty, unemployment, and war will be abolished. Mankind will rise to heights of social, economic, and cultural progress undreamed of in the past. All roads will lead to communism, and British and American imperialism can do nothing to stop this inevitable development.
How's it going?
Yeah, how did that work out for you?
But in the United States, an overwhelming majority of citizens feels that communism is not the inevitable development. Free enterprise and capitalism, which the communists despise, have given the American worker the highest standard of living in the world.
How's it working out for you?
But the answer to the future lies in correcting the faults of our own political and economic system is the ardent belief of such trade unionists as the CIO's aggressive Walter Reuther.
Democracy's most challenging problem is to find a way to translate technical progress into human progress, and prove that men can enjoy economic security without sacrificing their political freedom. The communist masters in the Kremlin offer the promise of economic security at the price of political and spiritual enslavement. While rejecting communism, American labor is equally determined to resist the abuse of economic power in the hands of the great monopolies. While labor maintains that the rights and dignity of the individual are superior to the claims of the state, we also insist that people are more important than profits, and that human rights come before property rights.
Ooh, ooh. Ludwig von Mises is on the phone.
It's devastating watching this, D. It's like they all have this massive boulder that they can't see about to crush them all.
About to crush all of them.
It's just devastating.
Man's more intimate knowledge of space and time in relation to the universe is constantly extending the limitless horizons of science.
Another really Faustian idea, by the way, the limitless horizons of science. There's no limit, it's infinite.
And as the 20th century reached the halfway point, the scientists' dream of unifying the basic concepts of the universe.
He is still alive at this point. I think he died in 55.
Albert Einstein.
Cracking pipe.
Excellent. Excellent pipe action.
More than any other group of individuals, the world's great scientists, like physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, realize the grave responsibilities of our new knowledge.
Science has profoundly altered the conditions of man's life.
The father of atomic weapons,
materially,
by the way,
and in ways of the spirit as well. It has extended the range of questions in which man has a choice. It has extended man's freedom to make significant decisions. No one can predict what vast...
I mean, I'll just pause it here, Dee, because I mentioned BAP earlier, Bronze Age Pervert. He would point out that these things that we're watching here have long ceased to be part of the official ideology, that the regime, as we call it now, has transformed to what he calls the GNC, global, let's just say, I can't say what the N stands for, communism, right?
Yeah.
That these values that he's talking about, the transformational power of science, this kind of like capital P liberal progressivism that we're watching here, actually is not the official ideology of the regime.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely true. And in fact, I mean, of course, it is this sort of thing that, of course, the 80s and 90s spent, you know, mocking and laughing at. You know, I mean, that this, that, you know, this sort of optimism of the mid-century period. You know, it was sort of positioned into the, you know, into the position of a laughing stock. And I think that's right. I think there was a huge sort of shift. I mean, the people that, I mean, it's very tempting to say, well, you know, yes, I mean, what we have now is a continuation of this. But I think that another power took the reins somewhere between this and now, you know. Yeah. And no, I think that's absolutely correct.
It obviously has a very different spirit. This, you know, also pernicious, by the way, in my view, but it's a different type of thing. I think Bat would say there's something in this vision that young men could still get behind.
Yeah. And they did.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas it's very difficult to get behind, you know, basically a regime that tells you to worship another race, to apologize for yourself and behave like a woman, essentially.
Yeah, because this was still a transcendent vision. And of course, what we have now is anti-transcendent, you know, in all ways.
Yeah. Interesting.
Knowledge the future of science will discover. But we know that as long as men are free to ask what they will, free to say what they think, free to think what they must, science will never regress, and freedom itself will never be wholly lost.
That's like it's a mainline American, like, just pump it in my veins, American, like, America, fuck yeah.
Oh, I love the contemplative full stop of the drag on the cigarette.
You understand, though, right? This vision was attractive, and there's a reason why it kind of seduced the world.
Yep.
But unfortunately, that in itself became subverted to, you know, what we have today, unfortunately.
As I said, they slipped inside the skin suit and they took control of it, and yeah, they completely subverted it. I mean, all of these ideas that he's talking about, I mean, all of the you know, this idea of using science to transcend, you know, some of the grimmest aspects of humanity, they have been using up the, you know, eating the seed corn. They've been burning the last fumes of that. I mean, they did it with COVID. You know, they took all of this kind of, you know,
yeah,
I would say real enthusiasm for these things, and they burned through its, you know, the trust that had been built up and the kind of dreams that had been built up for almost a century, and they just completely destroyed it, you know.
I mean, people saying it's only its conclusion. Obviously, I've been working on Spengler, so he's kind of in my mind at the moment. But I think if Spengler was looking at what had happened, he would not say what Bapp calls the GNC is a continuation of this. He'd say this is recognizably Faustian, right? Whether it's hubristic or foolhardy or insane, it's still reaching for infinity and beyond, right? There's no limit to what we can do. This is the Faustian spirit, whether it's Pope Gregory the Seventh or Oppenheimer, right? What the progressives have now is recognizably what Spengler would call Magian, right? He says the Magian civilization, which is basically of the Middle East and the peoples of the Middle East, including the Arabs and the Jews and various other groups. And the Persians, they all have a kind of worldview based on binary opposition of good and evil, right? And if you think about progressive ideology, it is basically a binary good versus evil narrative, not a reaching up to the stars narrative. And I still think, I mean, if you remember when I said there's a split between the techno-globalists and the neocons, I still think that you can recognize it there, because the neocons' view of the world is good versus evil, whereas the techno-globalists, and obviously we disagree with their vision, but they're still reaching for something in a recognizably European way. So I still think you can see it. When you spot it, you'll be like, oh yeah, this kind of insistent on a binary, the reduction of all issues to a good versus evil narrative, evil whites versus good oppressed minorities in this case, is something that is kind of alien to Faustian mindset, according to Spengler. So yes, just something to consider, that this thing, this GNC, is actually a foreign import, not a kind of natural next step for what Faustianism should or would become. Yes, I don't know if I agree with that, but it's just something to think about.
Yeah.
Knowledge has a direct bearing on the everyday life and habits of the average man. How science will shape his future, and how modern industry can bring nations and individuals ever closer together, is revealed by RCA's chairman, David Sarnoff.
In the next half century, people will see as well as hear around the world. Pocket-sized radio instruments will enable individuals to communicate with anyone, anywhere.
Oh. Newspaper.
This brings us back to the phone rant right at the start of the stream.
The fucking phone.
Magazines, mail, and messages will be sent through the air at lightning speed and reproduced in the home.
Yeah.
But material progress alone has not solved the problems which still plague mankind. With all the advantages provided him by the industrial age, he is more than ever in need of knowledge and understanding to help him solve his difficulties. To gain this knowledge, we have a free and democratic system of public education existing in the Western world, which has undergone a very encouraging development in this century. But mankind still has far to go in its universal search for knowledge.
See, look, it's lost a sense of the spirit, though, already here. Remember right at the start, we had all these people in churches praying, yeah. Remember?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
It's just about knowledge. It's a technical problem of knowledge and education.
Yeah.
It's not a kind of, oh, there's some other yearning in man that needs to be fulfilled. You know, it's knowledge. Just a knowledge problem, essentially.
Yeah. And look, all the women at the front, all the men in the back.
Because of this search, the deep need for more and better education for all citizens in this troubled world is a constant challenge to such eminent educators as Harvard University's president, James Bryant Conant.
The appraisal of the schools by our citizens is of paramount importance in this mid-20th century. This is true irrespective of the role that education plays in the grim ideological struggle of our times. For if I'm right that our American system of public education is the symbol of the special contribution which this republic has made to the concept of democracy.
Not sure you were.
The nature of the undertaking has significance which far transcends the immediate issue. It is rather in a demonstration that a certain type of society, long dreamed of by idealists, can be closely approached in reality. A free society in which the hopes and aspirations of a large fraction of the members find enduring satisfaction through outlets once reserved for only a small minority of mankind.
For men still hope they are halfway to a world of freedom, peace, and harmony. Today, this hope is embodied in the Organization of the United Nations. For survival rests now more than ever on honest cooperation among nations. In the second half of the 20th century, man must determine whether or not future generations shall live in freedom and at peace.
Well, there we go, Dewa. I'm sorry to say that this is all taken quite a while. I'm going to have to thinking that we're going to have a part 2D where we do all the others. What do you reckon? I don't know. I don't know about next week because I'm away next week, but maybe in the new year. What do you reckon? Because New Year's 2nd of Jan could do it.
I suppose so.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Interesting.
It is. It's too bad. We didn't get to the cozy ones. We got...
Unfortunately, we did.
We ended on a quite a sour note, I think.
Yeah, there was some interesting stuff in there, though.
I might
change the name of the stream to 1890s versus 1950 film.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
More accurate representation of what we did. There are a couple of super chats that have come in. Coney says, what are you doing hosting this stream? You should be writing your book. Well, I still got to do my streams, Coney. The book is coming. I've written over 45,000 words of that book now. So well on its way. Glow in the Dark says, Japanese cyclists are the only ones I met on average that aren't complete arseholes. Okay. He also says, what everyone being the same in a society, how does that work? Without diversity, how can they survive? But in all honesty, people don't want to have to argue 24/7 about customs and why their culture should exist. No wonder the West is in such a gloom. Very good point by Glow in the Dark. Shouldn't have to just constantly justify your own existence. Glow in the Dark also says, having diverse opinions and peoples doesn't make a happy society because everyone wants their customs to be supreme. So it turns into a bickering and imposing upon each other. Only those with power win that. Yeah, it also ends up with what Bowden talks about in that famous speech where he talks about... how you're kind of fighting for your little piece of the pie always, which is, again, you don't really want a slice. You want the whole cake because it's your culture. Shouldn't have to fight for it. He also says, notice the phrasing from the 1950s material progress. People aren't material progress. When people serve material progress and not the other way around, it becomes corrupted. Yiz says, D is right about it being impossible for men to be women. Trust me, I know. I've gone down all iterations of those avenues. Lol. Little pokey out tongue. Glow in the Dark says, deepest lore on Christian alarmists or crazies' predictions of the future and how close they got, as well as the tactics used to discredit them. I mean, if Sorokin, who I've been working on, was an alarmist or a crazy, if you could call him that, his predictions were basically 100% spot on. In all ways, and then some. But you may have other sorts in mind. I mean, it really depends on the group, right? There are groups who believe that the world was going to end in 1997 and stuff like that. And then that didn't happen. So he also says, false dichotomy, function versus artistic. Machinery has an art in and of itself. It is efficiency and growth to a point that it can't function outside an overmanaged environment that is the enemy. Do you want to speak to that at all, Dee? Machinery has an art in and of itself. Do you think that's true?
That's difficult because I think it's just sort of using the term art, in a really general way. I mean, I would say that's certainly true. You know that and. Of course, you know, traditionally you could apply that term, you know, the several mechanic arts and such. But yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I think generally when I speak about art, it's there we go. she doesn't agree. When I speak about art, I'm sort of speaking about something different. I think those things, this sort of attempt to kind of integrate everything into one sort of canon, it doesn't quite work, but something to think about.
There's this show that used to be on that I still watch sometimes called How Is It Made. It's just kind of
oh
Did you watch that?
I love
that. There is a kind of except, I mean, I hesitate with aesthetic, but there's a, I get a kind of what do they call it? ASMR. There's something about watching, I don't know, machinery work. You know, they could be making a bag of crisps or something, but, or, you know, how is a bottle of tomato ketchup made or whatever.
Oh, it's certainly, I mean, there's certainly beauty in those things, of course, because, yes, I mean, and as I said, I mean, there is a certain, you know, there is a certain, I can't think of a word that I would use for that. But yes, I mean, of course, you know, the in a way, all right, I will concede, you know, with the engineering of these things, that there is a type of order and efficiency and inventiveness that, you know, that is beautiful. Yeah, and you can get lost in a rabbit hole of those on YouTube. Because once you watch one, then there'll be another one recommended and another, and you will go from billiard balls to marshmallow cakes to, you know, God.
I think of the Radiohead song, Everything in Its Right Place. It's just watching.
Everything.
It's just watching a kind of, you know, absolute order play out in front of you, you know.
Indeed. Yeah. Those films.
Drongo says, I am about to finish the Fundamentalese writing. I see what he's done there.
Yeah.
he's deliberately spelt everything wrong to wind me up. Utis 4321 says, Russia hasn't chosen the Asiatic. They have been forced towards it. Putin spent most of his time in office trying to move towards the West. Yes, that is true. But of course, he has been rebuffed by the West. And so they will drift towards the East once more. But Spengler was talking about Russia under communism as having gone towards the Asiatic. In a lot of this literature, in Gobineau, in many others, the Chinese are seen as like what we would call today bugman, you know, as a kind of embodiment of a quite alien spirit.
The insectoids.
And obviously Russia going towards that was seen as being, you know, quote unquote Asiatic. Glow in the Dark says, diversity causes weakness. Diversity is weakness. Piers Taylor has just sent me a full stop, but it's got $5. Thank you very much, Piers. It means so much. And Glow in the Dark also says, knowledge and information isn't wisdom and character. Yes, indeed. Machiavelli Sucks to Go So says, Ritz versus Ats. It's called soccer.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. Ritz versus Ats. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dee. We'll be back tomorrow night for the... It's going to probably be quite a long stream.
The dreaded party stream.
The dreaded party stream. It's going to be filled with awkward women. Silences, women, stories that don't really go anywhere. You know, it's going to be amazing.
Drunken autists.
I mean, I've had about 30 people say they're going to come, Dee. So how we're going to manage that, I don't know.
No.
It's going to be like Chris Gard, Giant Geo.
No. Plus, no.
Dave Martell. You know,
we need a structure. We need some sort of
Italian
structure.
Morgoth, Scrappy Doo.
Not Scrappy Doo. We need a structure. We need
Alex Masters and Birdie.
Oh,
Alexander Adams said he was going to come. I mean, there's so many.
No, we need some sort
Carl,
of structure.
Carl said he was going to come.
No, not Carl.
It's how it's like putting like, you know, dozens of gorilla silverbacks in a room together and seeing like how you're all going to get on, you know.
Oh God, we need some sort of thing. We can't just have it be a free for all. We should have a game show or something and eliminate people and get rid of them.
do a vote, like vote people off the show.
Yeah, people off the island.
Who should leave next? You know. And people can make cases for why they should stay on.
Carl, you're the weakest link. Goodbye.
I might just play the host and get people cocktail sausages and serve them drinks. And
hide in the hide in the kitchen and talk about mental health with your bro. Remember that advert?
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. So Years wants to come on. You know, it's all... I'm just going to say...
Oh, why doesn't everyone come on? Why didn't all the chat come on? Everyone come on. Everyone in the fucking world come on.
Oh man!
All
it's
right.
Gonna, as you know, it'll end up with the dying right at the end. It'll end up with dying dregs, and it'll be me, you, and Panama Hat.
Exactly.
Deflating balloon.
Yeah, deflating balloon. The empty bowl of cocktail sausages, and you'll be sat there, and you'll be like, again from that advert. I want a cocktail sausage. Remember that little.
Yes,
crying
I
type.
Yes.
It's all too
all
much.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Ivor.
At least it'll be a diverse crowd.
It'll be truly diverse crowd, yes. Well, thank you very much, everyone.
Yep.
Do pick up your Trivium, your Mega Bundle, any of the courses, Foundations of Writing. Pick them all up now. I need... at least a few people to do that. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble for the huge number of Folio Society books I bought. So, yes, do pick up those courses. Dee, you doing any spaces or anything later on?
Yeah, maybe I'll do a Twitter space at the usual time when no one is awake. look for that tonight, friends. It is very weird because, of course, then I end up with a... You know, the only people available to join me are like Miss Patriarch and Chris Gard and Marcus. So it's a very Australian heavy show with Mr. Patriarch talking about snow for 10 minutes. So
excellent. Well, catch that later on. I will see you. Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow night.
All right.
Get out, everyone.
Maybe you should be living here!
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.